By remote, this is VOA News. I'm Michael Brown. The Democratic Party formally made Joe Biden its presidential nominee Tuesday night, and Biden's wife, Jill Biden, made a personal pitch to voters to support her husband, saying the U.S. needs leadership worthy of the country. Jill Biden also said her husband can bring the country together and move it forward. Former Secretary of State Colin Powell, a prominent Republican, said he endorsed Biden because of the values they share. He said Biden will restore the country's moral authority. Former President Bill Clinton doled out stark criticism of the Trump administration's handling of the coronavirus as he made a case for voters to pick Biden and his running mate Kamala Harris in the November election. Former President Jimmy Carter also delivered remarks Tuesday calling on the nation to opt for a Biden presidency. Vice presidential candidate Harris speaks Wednesday night, and Biden accepts the nomination on Thursday. Republicans plan to hold a similar series of events next week to nominate Donald Trump to run for a second presidential term. After making speeches in several battleground states this week, Mr. Trump is expected next week to make his acceptance speech from the White House. For more on the presidential race, visit our website, voanews.com. A developing story out of Africa. Malian President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita announced his immediate resignation late Tuesday on state television, hours after mutinous soldiers fired shots to the air outside his home before detaining him and the prime minister. The dramatic development comes after several months of regular demonstrations calling for Keita to step down from power 3 years before his final term was due to end. For more news, we invite you to join us at our website, voanews.com. Via remote, this is VOA News. U.S. Postmaster General Louis DeJoy promising that mail-in ballots here in the U.S. in the November presidential election will be delivered on time. DeJoy suspended all cost-cutting measures at the agency until after the election. The Democrats claim would possibly keep millions of votes from being sent to election officials to be counted. DeJoy, a wealthy campaign donor to President Trump, appointed to head the U.S. Postal Service, said that cost-cutting measures he has undertaken at the deficit-ridden agency will be put on hold until after Election Day, in his words, to avoid even the appearance of any impact on election mail. Trump has claimed, without evidence, that massive mail ballot schemes will lead to widespread fraud and rigged elections against him. House Democrats say they plan to vote in an unusual Saturday session on an extra $25 billion in funding for the postal agency and to limit changes they contend would inhibit the processing of mailed-in ballots. Senate Republicans this week are expected to introduce coronavirus relief legislation that will include billions for the Postal Service. Well, a bipartisan investigation into Russian efforts to influence the outcome of the 2016 U.S. presidential election found that Moscow successfully used a complex web of operatives and active measures to ensnare members of President Trump's campaign, in some cases leaving the incoming administration open to manipulation. The report concluded, among other things, that Trump's 2016 campaign chairman, Paul Manafort, posed a grave counterintelligence threat because of his dealings with people close to the Kremlin. Manafort was convicted of tax and bank fraud charges during a separate investigation by special counsel Robert Mueller. He was released from prison early this year. The Senate committee report also found the FBI's investigation of the Russian meddling in the election was flawed. Firefighters in Brazil say strong winds and hot, dry weather making it difficult to battle thousands of blazes growing in the Pantanal, world's largest wetland area. Brazil's National Institute of Space Research said it spotted more than 3,000 fires in the first 2 weeks of August, five times as many as the same period last year. Experts are blaming the fires in part to higher than average temperatures and below average rainfall since mid-July. As always, for more news, we invite you to join us at our website, that is voanews.com, or the VOA mobile app. Via remote, I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, August 19th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Mali's M5 RHP welcomes army mutiny, but says protests will continue until President Keita officially resigns.
What we hear so far is that the mutineers took him and his family to Kati, which are military base there. But what we're trying to say here is that the M5 has planned some activities today and will proceed with those activities.
We'll have expert analysis of the crisis in Mali. Amnesty International accuses Ivorian police of enabling machete-wielding groups to attack protesters. Sudan marked 1 year of civilian-military power sharing with a new wave of protests. And Ugandan police summoned presidential candidate General Tumukunde today, Wednesday.
He's being summoned by the CID, the Criminal Investigations Department, alleging that he has been consulting veterans.
And a Zimbabwe judge disqualifies the lawyer for jailed journalist Hopewell Chigono. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Mali's M5-RHP protest movement says the group will forge ahead with its planned demonstrations calling for the resignation of President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita. This comes as latest reports say rebellious soldiers arrested and detained President Keita and top government officials. Reuters news agency said President Keita was being detained at his residence in the southwestern part of the capital, Bamako. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres on Tuesday condemned the arrest of President Keita and called for his immediate release. Dr. Ramata Sissoko Cisse, president of the Change in Mali movement, says what happened Tuesday in Mali was not a military coup, but rather a part of the popular uprising. She says the people of Mali will continue their protest until President Keita is officially out of power.
What we hear so far is that the mutineer took him and his family to Kati, which are military base there, to get hold of him. But what we're trying to say here is that the M5 has planned some activities today and will proceed with those activities. And we just want to thank the military for protecting the citizen who put them there. So at this point, only the military and the government knows his whereabouts. We don't know that. All we know that our movement will continue until he resigns.
I'm sure you know that the United States has said that it is opposed to all extra constitutional changes of government, whether it is by those in the street or security forces. The Economic Community of West African States is also calling on the mutineers to return to their barracks.
Well, what we want to tell the ECOWAS or United Nations is that the Malian people stood today to fight for democracy. This man was not elected. He rigged election and he imposed himself, and the Malian people never accepted that. All we're asking him is to resign. The military people are not involved in this change, so we're not going to call it a military coup or anything like that. This is the Malian people standing, and the military people standing and protect the population who are demanding the president to resign. So we don't believe that the military are involved in the change of power. It is the Malian people, and this happens everywhere. It happened in Egypt when people stood up and said to the president, you do not represent the people. And the military said, we cannot kill our brothers and sisters. Remember, this president killed 28 people just a couple of weeks ago when we protest in Bamako and in Sikasso and in Kai, where they abused and detained so many people. They have so many political prisoners today. So the military people are brothers and sisters who stood up and said, we will not let our sisters and brothers be killed by an incompetent government. The M5-RFP, our movement, with the people behind us who are standing and say the power belongs to the people. This is in the constitution of Mali. All we are asking the international community to respect the Malian people's will, to respect the movement who is representing 90% of the population who wants change in Mali.
Dr. Cisse, would the protesters welcome the removal of President Keita if it happened through the military means?
Well, the people are asking to be protected by the military because they are there for the people, not for a government. What we're saying is we want the president to resign peacefully, democratically, by the will of the Malian people. And we are asking the military to protect people. Now, they're not involved in any politics. They will not be involved. This is not related to any coup or anything like that. The military will not take power. It's going to be the people of Mali who will decide to run the country the way they wanted to run their own country. So we don't want the confusion here. Everything is clear in our mind. We are a civic movement, and we are standing for the right of people, and we will be continuing to do that. To separate the army from the politics is going to be what we're going to do. We had planned our protest already today. It will continue until Friday and Monday until he comes to the TV and say he resigned democratically by the will of the Malian people.
Dr. Ramata Sissoko Cisse is president of the Change in Mali movement. She was speaking with us from Lawrenceville, Georgia. Late reports say President Keita announced last night around midnight Malian time his resignation and the dissolution of parliament. Tuesday's military mutiny in Mali started in the same army base as the 2012 coup d'etat, and it comes after weeks of protests calling on President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita to step down. Corinne Dufcat, Sahel Director for Human Rights Watch, has been researching Mali's military actions in the crisis-torn north for years. She spoke to Ricky Stryak about current military grievances and context of yesterday's mutiny.
Yeah, well, it's early days, so it's difficult to know what's at the origin of this particular incident. But what is clear is over the past several years, Mali has really lurched from crisis to crisis. You know, first when the northern part of the country fell to Tuareg separatists and Islamists, and then a coup in the south, and then instability spreading into the center, which has been characterized by mass atrocity, and then demonstrations, which in many ways paralyzed the capital. So this is the latest in a series of incidents which suggests that there are deep problems within the Malian government.
What's kind of the military sense of loyalty to Keita, especially given the tension that he's facing from the public already?
There's been a tremendous amount of effort by the Malians and also by the international community to professionalize the Malian army. And while there have been way too many allegations of abuse and not enough progress at ensuring investigations and accountability for allegations of abuse by them, you know, there has been effort to reform the military, the Ministry of Defense, and there had been some progress along those lines. That said, there were persistent allegations of some governance problems within the military. The Malian military has suffered really significant losses of personnel, as young soldiers have died in the scores in brash, organized and lethal attacks by the armed Islamists against the Malian military. And you know, that has upset, obviously, the families, Malians in general, but also certain people within the military who have suggested that, you know, resupply, training and discipline was a problem.
You mentioned the history of Kati. I mean, the 2012 coup happened there. And is it worrisome? Because Mali is in a much worse state now, security-wise, than it was in 2012.
Mali's security challenges have increased exponentially since the 2012 coup, as armed Islamists have spread from the north into central and even elsewhere in Mali. That insecurity has led to significant communal tension and violence by opposing ethnic militias, and in which hundreds of civilians have been killed. There are ambushes and IEDs and attacks on villages that happen on a regular basis, and large swaths of the country are really insecure. So the situation is indeed more precarious now than it was even back in 2012.
That was Corinne Dufcat, a Sahel director at Human Rights Watch. She was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Washington, D.C. Amnesty International has accused the police in Ivory Coast capital Abidjan of allowing groups of men, some armed with machete and heavy sticks, to attack protesters demonstrating against President Alassane Ouattara's decision to run for a third term. Amnesty says it obtained its information through exclusive testimonies. Ivory Coast constitution limits the president to 2 5-year terms, and the opposition says a third term for President Ouattara is a violation of the constitution. Samira Daou is Amnesty International's regional director for Western Central Africa. She says Amnesty has called on Ivorian authorities to undertake a thorough and impartial investigation into the allegations of human rights abuses.
Since the protest started a few days ago, we have tried to collect information from the ground because we have partners and contact, of course, in Côte d'Ivoire. And we've been able to collect several testimonies that confirmed what we have probably seen in those videos, showing that police officers were apparently allowing groups of men, some of whom were armed with machetes and heavy sticks, to attack protesters that were demonstrating against President Alassane Ouattara's decision to run for a third term in office.
Did you or did Amnesty approach the Ivorian police about this, and what exactly did they have to say?
Actually, we have collected testimonies of witnesses and people who were on the ground and tried to cross-check the testimonies from police officers that were on the ground, and they were shocked to see their chiefs allowing those dozens of men armed with machetes and sticks assaulting protesters, you know, as if they were doing the police job.
What does Amnesty know in terms of the exact number of people who might have been killed or even arrested from this protest?
Officially now, the figures that we have is that about 70 people were arrested since the 10th of August when the first protest started. And authorities talk about 5 people that were killed, most of them outside of Abidjan. We have not investigated this specific case.
If what Amnesty is saying is true, what is your biggest fear?
This is absolutely worrying because those people, of course, are neither trained nor accountable, and they are not supposed to be managing protests. So it is really worrying. And more particularly, of course, when you know the history of Côte d'Ivoire and the way they used an official law enforcement agency in Côte d'Ivoire. So we have previously documented all those human rights abuses committed by armed men in civilian clothes. So it's really worrying that we could see this happening now, more particularly in this very, very tense context.
You have called on the authorities to do an independent investigation. Is it likely that the government will do this?
What we are asking authorities is first to immediately stop these groups of men from committing further crimes, because it happened in several places and several times, not only on the 13th, the day of the main protest, but also yesterday morning, for instance, in the district of Yopougon in Abidjan. So this is apparently a kind of modus operandi that has been agreed or at least allowed. And what we are asking, of course, is to make sure that they stop this from happening.
Samira Daou is Amnesty International's Regional Director for Western Central Africa. She was speaking with us from the Senegalese capital, Dakar. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, August 19th. Sudan marked 1 year of a civilian-military power-sharing deal this week with a new wave of protests demanding wider and faster reforms. The deal created a joint sovereign council to rule Sudan until elections, but a legislative body has yet to be formed. As Naba Mohideen reports from Khartoum, the civilian leadership has struggled to assert its authority against their military counterpart.
Hundreds of protesters gathered near the Council of Ministers in Khartoum on Tuesday, wearing and holding Sudan's flag and chanting for reforms. At another event Monday, riot police arrested dozens of protesters and fired tear gas to disperse the crowd. Khalid Ahmed was one of the protest leaders who helped end the iron-fisted rule of longtime President Omar al-Bashir. He said he's surprised that a little over a year later, he's participating in a new wave of protests. Ahmed says nobody could ever imagine that he would ever march against the new government, especially given that it was created after huge sacrifices. The government could make some progress in major issues, but it's been a year now, and they can't see a clear plan to reform the situation. In August 2019, military leaders and pro-democracy protest leaders signed a power-sharing agreement and a draft for a new constitution. The protesters want the transitional government to abide by the draft and form a new legislature, as well as take steps to improve Sudan's economy, make peace with rebel movements, and stop tribal clashes in the east and west of the country. Political analyst Ahmed Abdul Ghani says the new wave of protests could represent a real challenge for the power-sharing government. He says if these protesters' demands for reforms are not met, wider anti-government demonstrations are expected against the transitional authorities. On the peace process, the transitional authorities recently announced the completion of security procedures with the rebel groups and said a final agreement could be signed within a few weeks. The transitional government has also pledged to hand over Bashir and allies of his regime to the International Criminal Court to face trial on war crimes and genocide charges related to the Darfur conflict, which left 300,000 people dead and millions displaced. The former president and his aides are currently in a federal prison, awaiting trial on charges of undermining the constitution in the 1989 military coup that brought them to power. Naba Muhyiddin for VOA News, Khartoum.
Ugandan presidential candidate, retired General Henry Tumukunde, has been summoned to appear today at the headquarters of the Criminal Investigation Division of the Ugandan Police. The Director of Criminal Investigations, Grace Akulo, summoned General Tumukunde late yesterday, Tuesday, to answer questions while the general held meetings on a number of occasions with Army veterans discussing politics. General Tumukunde, a former security minister in President Yoweri Museveni's government, has announced his intention to run for president in Uganda's 2021 election. Beatrice Kiraso is coordinator of political and administrative affairs for General Tumukunde's Reform Uganda Pressure Group. She says the authorities are engaging in selective justice.
Today, the general left his office and went to a place called Buyukwe. Buyukwe is on Jinja Road just before you get into Jinja Town. And he went to consult a few of his supporters and coordinators, as is provided for in the Presidential Elections Act. I'm very sure that the COVID-19 health regulations were followed because there was social distancing and everybody was wearing a mask. He was meeting a group of only 10 people, but no sooner had they started than the police came and raided the place where they were meeting. So the general was taken to the police station.
My understanding is that he has retired from the military and he wants to run for president. Why is the government citing him to appear in court and citing military law?
No. Those are two issues, James. First, he was arrested today for carrying out consultations, and yet it is provided for under the law, okay? And he did not breach any health regulations. That is one issue. Now, the other issue just came in a few minutes ago when we realized that he's being summoned by the CID, the Criminal Investigations Department, alleging that he has been consulting veterans, you know, like retired or army officers who have left the army. So there are two issues here.
Do you think this is happening because the government might think he is in violation of election law, because you are not supposed to, according to the Elections Commission, to campaign, you are only supposed to campaign virtually?
Yeah, you're supposed to campaign virtually, but then the guidelines that they issued, they allowed that you could meet limited numbers of people physically. And it's happening all over the other political parties. The ruling political party, for example, are holding big rallies, processions. So this is selective justice.
The general made a comment on Tuesday saying that he knows how to stop rigging of election results. How does he know that?
Yeah, because he was in the intelligence. He has been part of the NRM machinery. And in the last elections, he was very active on the side of the ruling party. But he's saying election results have always been tampered with. So when he says that he knows how to stop the rigging, I think he means from his previous experience.
Beatrice Kiraso is coordinator of political and administrative affairs for General Henry Tumukunde's Reform Uganda Pressure Group. She was speaking with us from the capital, Kampala. A judge in Zimbabwe has endorsed a recommendation by the country's prosecutor general to disqualify human rights lawyer Beatrice Mtetwa as the lawyer for jailed Zimbabwe journalist Hopewell Chigono. Chigono and Jacob Ngarivumbe, leader of the Transform Zimbabwe movement, are in prison, accused of preaching violence ahead of a planned July 31st protest against poor governance in Zimbabwe. The judge accused Mtetwa of posting on social media disparaging information about the court. The judge asked the prosecutor general to prosecute Mtetwa for contempt. He also sent the copy of his ruling to the Law Society of Zimbabwe. Mtetwa denies disparaging the court on Facebook, but she said the referral to the Law Society is probably the best opportunity that she has to officially show that the Zimbabwe judiciary is not independent.
As you'll be aware, last week the prosecutor applied to have me removed from the case on the basis of what they said were my comments on my Facebook page. And when they produced what they believed were my comments, it turned out that they were actually referring to a Facebook page that's run and operated by Laurie Conway, who is a documentary filmmaker and who had done a documentary about myself and my work called Beatrice Mtetwa and the Rule of Law. So obviously we led evidence to show that I'm not on Facebook. That's not my Facebook page, and that the comments were actually not mine.
Beatrice, the judge says that the prosecutor general consider institution of prosecution against the lead counsel. That means you. Can you be prosecuted for this?
Well, it was the prosecutor general who asked the magistrate to remove me from the case anyway. I don't know what they'll prosecute me for. He says in his ruling for contempt of court, but I don't know under what law the prosecutor general can prosecute me. And also just look at the absurdity of it all. The prosecutor general moves for my removal from the case before a magistrate who now says the same prosecutor general must prosecute me before the same magistrate's court. I mean, it's like a circus.
The judge said that a copy of the judgment has been made available to the Law Society of Zimbabwe. What does this mean?
It means he's saying to the Law Society it must look at whether or not I must be deregistered as a lawyer. Am I still a fit and proper person to remain being a lawyer? That's what it means. The Law Society will then go through its processes. I'm really not worried about the Law Society. What I think for myself is that this is probably the best opportunity that I've had to officially show that the judiciary in Zimbabwe is severely compromised. It is not impartial. It is not independent. The Law Society will call on me to respond to the magistrate's allegations, which are not quite clear. And then I'll have the opportunity to say everything that I've wanted to say and which I couldn't say before.
In the meantime, what has become of the case of your client, journalist Chigono, and his co-defendant?
As I said, we had anticipated my removal, so we had engaged an advocate who started handling the case today and started the bail application today. It has been postponed to tomorrow for continuation of the bail hearing. Jacob's bail hearing was heard yesterday, and the decision is expected on Friday.
Beatrice Mtetwa is the lawyer for jailed Zimbabwe journalist Hopewell Chigono. She was speaking with us from the capital, Harare. And that's it for this Wednesday, August 19th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Reiki Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you a very good day.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bubu music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to Ndumbulu and Makosa to Kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable. Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.